and thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight. I'm Brandis Friedman. Here's what we're looking at. Reports of increased immigration enforcement are surging around the country. We talk with community groups in Chicago about what they're seeing. And a look at efforts to monitor air pollution across Chicago's neighborhoods amid the summer heat. First off tonight, the city is facing a $130 million budget shortfall for this fiscal year, and the mayor isn't mincing words on who he says is to blame. Mayor Brandon Johnson gave his mid-year budget report this afternoon and called out alderpeople who passed the spending plan, saying the revenue sources it relies on have not materialized. Johnson did not support this budget that went into effect in January without his signature. His plan had included millions in new taxes on large corporations.
I'm working hard to avoid layoffs and cutting services. Hopefully it's a lesson learned by certain members of city council, because these challenges won't disappear in one budget. When we think about the long-term sustainability of our economy, what I've put forward has produced the type of dividends that I anticipated. What they have put forward has literally produced the type of shortfall that we're experiencing today.
But older people who crafted the spending plan are accusing Johnson of failing to fully implement the spending plan. In a statement, 39th Ward Alderman Samantha Nugent says, quote, Mayor Johnson and his administration have spent 6 months slow walking the implementation of new revenues and efficiencies designed to close our budget deficit and prevent this administration from creating excuses to raise taxes on businesses, jobs, and working families. Chicagoans deserve transparency and the truth from the mayor instead of attempts to shift blame away from the failures of his administration. U.S. Attorney Andrew Boutros is responding today to even more calls for his resignation. This time, members of City Council's Ethics and Government Oversight Committee voted in favor of a non-binding resolution that slams Boutros for the botched Broadview 6 case, sparking a mass exodus of prosecutors, allowing grand jury irregularities and breaches of trust with judges. The measure now heads to the full City Council on July 15th. In a statement, Boutros responded that he will not be bullied into dropping public corruption matters or closing out newly opened ones. He says, quote, no one faces this level of coordinated opposition and performative theatrics unless they are viewed as representing an existential threat to a system that is largely corrupt and broken. When this sort of coordinated panic sets in, it means that our federal leaders are on to something big. Westside neighbors who've experienced severe flooding may begin to see some relief once a new underground rainfall storage system is in place.
Flooding isn't something that is new to any city in the United States. But what is new is the unusual and exponential amount of flooding that we all are experiencing. So if anyone thinks that climate change isn't real, to put it in perspective, we received more rain over the 4th of July weekend than we have traditionally received in the entire month of July.
The City of Chicago and the Metropolitan Water Reclamation District partnered to install two wing storage units, which serve as additional holding tanks under neighborhood streets and are attached to existing sewer infrastructure. The two units will be placed in the areas you see here. By capturing and temporarily storing excess stormwater during heavy rainfall, 2,900 homes and businesses should see reduced flooding across the 28th, 29th, and 37th wards. Major storms in the summer of 2023 led to severe flooding and damage across those West Side neighborhoods. A cardiologist is the latest Chicagoan to join the race for mayor. Dr. Lisa Nee began her career as a nurse before becoming an interventional cardiologist. While working at Hines VA Hospital, she spoke out about failures in patient care that she says put veterans at risk. Nee says her campaign priorities include affordability, trusted leadership for a safer city, and fiscal responsibility that protects the next generation from inherited debt. She joins the six other candidates so far that you see on your screen, with more expected. Current Mayor Brandon Johnson has yet to formally announce whether he'll seek a second term. Up next, the U.S. sees an uptick in ICE arrests. That's right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
Immigration-related arrests are surging nationwide. ICE and Border Patrol made more than 10,000 arrests within a span of 5 days at the end of June, according to a report by the New York Times. And here in Chicago, immigrant rights advocates say they can feel the impact. Joining us to talk about this are Maria Orozco, Outreach Coordinator at Street Vendors Association of Chicago, Ellen Zoe, Immigrant Justice Community Organizer at Asian Americans Advancing Justice Chicago, and Diana Rashid, State Director of Legal Defense at the Resurrection Project. Thanks to all of you for joining us. Ellen, first to you, what kind of immigration enforcement have you been seeing or getting reports about in the last month?
Yeah, in the past couple of weeks, we've definitely seen an uptick of immigration enforcement, and it's different than what we saw in the fall during Operation Midway Blitz, where it was a lot more violent, a lot more flashy, but we've seen a lot of ICE present at courts and really targeted arrests, like obviously that they've shown up at people's homes or like even at the grocery store, like very obviously targeting folks on the ground.
Diana, as someone who fields requests for legal assistance, what have you noticed over the past month?
Yeah, we noticed a significant increase in the requests and the referrals that we get from community members and from hotlines, like the rapid response hotlines across the city and the state. Over the course of, we keep track on a weekly basis of this data, and in June we noticed a near doubling of those requests from what we had seen in prior months, including March, April, and May.
When you say a near doubling, what kind of numbers are we talking about?
We're talking about, we had seen of the detained referrals and requests that we had been getting on a month, it was hovering around 90 to 100 referrals per month for the prior months, and we saw just over 170 in June, so a significant increase over the prior previous months.
Maria, what effect is this enforcement having on communities?
It has a big effect because it's affecting our working class. A lot of our vendors are being detained, some are being detained outside of the court. That is something we haven't seen, we didn't see in a few months. And they're starting to not come outside to vend or any stuff like that. They are terrified. They're hearing of ICE coming into the homes. They did detain one outside of his house and then another two outside of courts. So it is affecting the way that they're living and the way that they're making their income as well.
How would you say arrest tactics have changed since Midway Blitz, which of course we heard about in the fall, where they could turn up in any neighborhood?
I see that they are still showing up. They are still wearing their masks. We got some reports today of them. You see them wearing their mask and then same vehicles with no license plates. And they're also still attacking some vendors. I do know that they're also attacking some of the just people that aren't vendors, of course. And they're scaring them and still hurting them. It's not as bad as it used to. And I know it did decrease a little bit, but the tactics are still there. They haven't bettered in any such.
Ellen, from Midway Blitz to now, how are you seeing Chicagoans respond?
I think what I love about Chicago is that we continue to show up strong for our neighbors. And some of the infrastructure that was built during Operation Midway Blitz, especially around mutual aid and these rapid response networks, continue. And people, even though we don't have the national attention in the same way before, the volunteers and neighbors who have stepped up during the fall continue to step up today and continue to recognize ICE vehicles in their neighborhoods, call the Family Support Network hotline, which is 855-435-7693. Like, people are still manning that hotline every day. And so Chicagoans still show up strong for their neighbors.
Diana, explain how intensive legal assistance for immigration detention can be and why that is.
Yeah, it's very resource and labor intensive to be able to, from the very first step, like to even reach someone who is detained, to track down where they are detained because they're constantly being transferred. We no longer have ICE detention here in Illinois, but they're quickly transferred to other states. And oftentimes the database that ICE updates with people's information or where they've been transferred to is delayed and not updated. So even finding the person to be able to schedule a legal consultation with them is a huge hurdle. And then to secure their release is very resource intensive now because of recent policy changes at the from the Board of Immigration Appeals, the Department of Justice saying that individuals who entered without inspection are not eligible for immigration bond. In many cases, it requires a habeas petition filed in federal district court to be able to secure somebody's release. And that is something that is a, you know, enormous change from the previous administration and something that was not necessary before. So now you add layers of administrative burdens, of legal work, of additional expertise that's required.
Maria, you know, we're talking about how street vendors have been affected, particularly by ICE at courthouses. Tell us a little bit more about that. What's happening for them?
A few weeks ago, we had two vendors that were actually fined in the city of Chicago downtown area for vending in the downtown. It is prohibited. And then CPD did fine them and gave them court at a different location that where they're normally sent is to Superior, which is an administrative hearing. And they were sent to a different court where they get misdemeanors. It's in Kedzie. And when these two vendors went, unfortunately, they were, when they stepped outside, they were detained. And right away, they were transferred to Kentucky, I believe, or Indiana, so both of them. And they did end up signing their deportation letter, and they're unfortunately back home now. It's very unfortunate, and then we've been trying to get as much resource as we can, different networks, to try to get vendors to do their courts through Zoom. Luckily, we had help from the city that they have helped us get a lawyer and make sure these fines and these tickets are being, you know, forgotten about. They do court through Zoom today, so they're not giving them any tickets anymore. So it's a lengthy process in order to try to get this through Zoom. We've helped 15 last week on Thursday. We did court through Zoom at the office, and we were able to dismiss their case.
Ellen, what should people know about how this impacts the Asian American community?
Yeah, I think obviously the Latino community has been targeted, and but the Asian American community, although not as visible, 1 in 8 Asian immigrants in Illinois is undocumented. And what we're seeing is actually there's a lot of fear and panic in our communities, and we stay quiet and don't access resources in the same way because we are not as visible. So our communities are deeply impacted by the continual escalated immigration enforcement.
Of course. Diana, just a few seconds left. What legal rights do you remind people of, regardless of their citizenship status?
They have the right to speak with a lawyer, and they should reach out to organizations. We have resources through city funding, through state funding, which have been critical to be able to provide a lifeline to people, to be able to provide legal information and legal advice, and to know if there is relief that they can access in their case, or as Maria said, in some situations they may decide that they don't want to continue with fighting their case because of the indefinite detention.
Right. And then they have to make what is a very tough choice, I'm sure. Thanks to the three of you for joining us. Best of luck to you and your work. Maria Orozco, Ellen Zhou, and Diana Rashid. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Up next, how air pollution is affecting the lives of Chicagoans and what's being done to combat the issue. The Chicago Department of Public Health says air pollution is impacting the life expectancy of Black and Latino residents in Chicago. Last fall, CDPH and the University of Illinois Chicago joined forces to shrink this gap by installing nearly 300 air quality monitors around the city, the most in the United States. Now the project is facing its biggest test yet, the summer heat. High temperatures tend to make air quality worse, especially for communities on the city's south and west sides. Joining us to talk more about the project and how air pollution affects millions throughout the city are Serap Erdahl, Open Air Chicago project leader and University of Illinois Chicago School of Public Health professor, Grace Adams, Environmental Health Projects Administrator at the Chicago Department of Public Health, and Jamie Groth Searle, founder and executive director of the Southwest Collective, a neighborhood organization working to improve the quality of life on Chicago's southwest sides. Thanks to all of you for joining us. Grace, I want to start with you. The American Lung Association's 2026 State of the Air report ranks the Chicago's air pollution, or the Chicago area's air pollution, as one of the worst in the country. What is your reaction to that?
I'm not surprised. Historically, Chicago has seen, poor air pollution. We've seen air quality issues across the board. Experiences have been voiced from all of our community members. I'm not surprised to hear that, and I'm really hopeful that, this project is the next step in addressing that.
Serap, what kind of pollutants are in the air? What makes air pollution?
Air pollution is formed in the atmosphere as a result of emissions from a variety of sources, specifically industrial sources, mobile sources like cars, trucks, and also more and more wildfire smoke. Air pollutants are either directly emitted into the atmosphere or they are formed in the atmosphere through chemical reactions. But in summary, air pollution is contamination of air that we breathe and with chemicals, toxic gases, and particles that are released from a variety of air pollution sources.
Does air pollution, does it impact all of us? Because we all breathe the air, or is it mostly a concern for those with respiratory illnesses?
There are vulnerable populations that are at higher risk for adverse health effects of air pollution, and these are specifically children, pregnant women, and the elderly.
Okay. Grace, tell us more about Open Air Chicago and how it works.
Sorry.
Hey, Grace. I'm coming to you, Jamie. Don't worry.
Yeah, so Open Air Chicago is a community network of 277 air sensors across the city. And so it's collecting concentrations of fine particulate matter and nitrogen dioxide, which are two of the pollutants my colleague just mentioned. And so all of these sensors, there's one in at least every community area and at least one in every ward. So that way we are getting full citywide coverage and we can understand, what's happening at the hyperlocal level. And, we're encouraging, residents to really take advantage of this tool and use it as like a health education piece, what they can do. We're putting the power of public health in the hands of the public.
Serap, the Open Air Chicago map, I'm gonna put that up on the screen for our viewers to see it, because this is what it looked like earlier this afternoon. Why do you think it is important to have these monitors on a neighborhood level?
It is very important to measure air quality, particularly in our city, because as you mentioned, the American Lung Association identified Chicago as one of the most polluted cities in the country. In terms of particulate matter pollution, it is the 13th most pollutant in the polluted city in the nation. And in terms of ozone, it's the 15th most polluted city. On top of it, as we have witnessed in 2023 and 2025, both in the summers, the wildfire smoke from Western US and Canada formed unhealthy conditions for our residents in Chicago. And in addition, we are experiencing higher temperatures reaching 90 degrees for longer periods in the summer. And that serves as a means to trap pollutants due to the high pressure system to trap the pollutants over the city for longer periods of time. And all of what I'm describing serves as higher air pollution burden and associated higher health risk for our Chicago residents, but particularly for residents in the southeast, south, and western parts of the city due to disproportionate air pollution burden in those specific communities.
Right, and I want to get into that. We all remember, of course, those last summer, in the summer of 2023, when the skies were orange and the days were ugly. Jamie, tell us a little bit more about how poor air quality, how it disproportionately affects the residents that Sarah just mentioned on the city's south and west sides.
Okay, so if you take it back, right, 100 years or so ago, the areas that you're talking about, so the south, the west, and the southwest side, I'm from the southwest side, we're all very industrial in nature. And so you're seeing like a key word being thrown around here, which is industrial, right? Like industry, what does that mean? It means that there is a lot happening, a lot being made, a lot being transported across like our interstates, our rivers, our airways. And so there are some neighborhoods where that is happening a lot more than others. And they happen to be on the south, the west, and the southwest and southeast sides. And these are folks that are, you know, naturally lower income. We are, you know, majority Black and brown. And, you know, because you have low income, you also have less ability to, you know, afford health insurance. And so you're starting to see a lot of this domino effect across generations. And so it's not just this generation that has this issue. You know, these are chronic issues that are generational for families. You know, I have asthma and so does my kid, for example. I'm pregnant and I have complications because, you know, when I'm out in the heat, it gets really hard to walk around and move, for example.
What do people need to know about, you know, going out into their communities when the air quality is high or when the air quality is poor? And why is that important information?
It's super important. And the reason that it's important is because you need to know when it's safe to go outside. So, you know, like Sarap mentioned, if you are pregnant, you know, you may have a little bit more complication than normal, something you're not used to. And that is labored breathing, especially as you get into the final trimester. You might have a child with asthma or another respiratory issue. You might have an elderly parent or someone living with you, like an aunt or an uncle, who might have a respiratory difficulty. And so knowing when those days are moderate, severe, or just straight up orange, you should stay home or maybe make alternate arrangements for the day. That's important to know.
Yeah. Grace, how can air quality be so different just a few miles apart?
So it's based off of how, like, the actual monitors that we're using in this network are, you know, hyperlocal. They're getting granular information, and so it's like what's happening right there. When you're looking at your weather app, for example, and you're seeing air quality, you know, on that screen, it's different because it's pulling in from, you know, the federal reference monitors, and like those are not so close together in the city. And so as a result, those are more, you know, aggregate, like how you can look at it from a city perspective. And so this network allows us to actually see what's going on in your area. And so each of those little dots on the map really shows you like what your air sensor is and, you know, what that quality is going to be if you go outside. And so that's what we're really trying to like stress to people.
Sarap, we've seen an increase in poor air quality over the last several years. Why is that? Why is it worse in the summer? Obviously the heat is a factor.
As I noted, there are multiple variables associated with it. One is the wildfire episodes that we've been experiencing. Particularly, we experienced in June, July 2023 and July, August 2025, increased number of days during the summer with temperatures reaching up to 90 degrees and higher. That serves as a pollution trapment with the high pressure system causing trapment of pollutants over the city, resulting in higher exposures to harmful air pollutants. And also the higher temperatures serve as a catalyst for chemical reactions in the atmosphere. So that results in formation of higher concentration of ozone and other pollutants.
Yep, okay, a lot, sorry, we're out of time. But a lot for policymakers to pay attention to. I'll have to leave it there. Sarap Erdahl, Grace Adams, and Jamie Grothsirl. Thanks to everybody.
Thank you.
And that is our show for this Tuesday night. You can stream Chicago Tonight on our WTTW YouTube channel every evening and catch up on any programs you may have missed. And join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 10. Candidate for Chicago Mayor Matt Brewer joins us to discuss his vision for the city. Now, for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Brandis Friedman. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that contributes to public safety policy and guidelines.